Chuck.
Thank you. I'm Chuck. I'm an alcoholic. So we left off in the inventory process. One of the things I was going to bring up, when I was doing it, the third step, when I do it with someone I sponsor, I've been using this list of questions that I got. And how this happened was I went to Akron, Ohio, some time ago, and this guy asked me if I wanted to go tour Dr. Bob's house, and of course I wanted to. And he had a key to the building, so we went there at night, and there was nobody there. It was really cool. And we went up to Dr. Bob's room, we walk into his bedroom, and they have his medical bag's laying on the bed still, and there's like a little laundry chute where he used to tie his bottles and hang them in there, and he, this guy grabs me, and he's got like 2 years. I think I was like 12 or something at the time, and he closed the door behind me, and he goes, "Are you ready to surrender?" And I went, "What's this guy gonna do? I mean, I don't swing that way." And and he says, "Get on your knees, and I'll get on my knees." And he gets across the bed, and before he does that, he pulls the sheet out of his pocket and starts reading these questions off, and I went. He goes, "This is what they used to do." I don't know if that's true or not, but it's a list of questions that just really go over the selfishness. They're out of the book, but if you want to look at them later, I'll let you look at them. I don't want to go over them because we're in the inventory, but anyway, I usually do that prior to moving forward. But we're on the inventory. We're there, so I'm listing my resentments. It says that we went back through our lives, nothing but counted but thoroughness and honesty. So what do I write down? Well, I want to be honest and be thorough. So whatever that means, I don't know. For some people, it means, you know, volumes and volumes of War and Peace. For others, it's, you know, a few pages. I just did one, a thorough inventory, and it was only 6 pages. It was 6 pages of stuff, and it was what I had. So it was like a thorough inventory for the time of the things that were still kind of I wasn't okay with. So we go on here, and then it mentions this line on page 66. The first thing apparent was that this world, its people, were quite often wrong. To conclude others are wrong was as far as most of us ever got. The usual outcome is we stayed sore. Sometimes it was remorse or sore at ourselves. The more we fought and tried to have our own way, the worse matters got. As in war, the victor only seemed to win. Our moments of triumph were short-lived. So the usual outcome is people continue to wrong us. My friend Scott used to say, "You're right and you're dead." You're right. They're all jerks. You're right. What am I going to do with that? What are we going to do? What are we going to do? So it goes on in the next paragraph here. Check this out. If someone wants to read this, look at how many times he does this death threat thing on me. This is kind of interesting what he does here. If you pay attention, there's a bunch of stuff here that's not too pleasant. Somebody want to read that? It is plain.
It is plain that a life which includes deep resentment leads only to futility and unhappiness. To the precise extent that we permit these, do we squander the hours that might have been worthwhile? But with the alcoholic, worst hope is the maintenance and growth of a spiritual experience. This business of resentment is infinitively great. We found that it is fatal.
Go ahead, I'm sorry.
So when harboring such feelings, we shut ourselves off from the sunlight of the spirit. The insanity of alcohol returns and we drink again. And with us, the drink is survived.
Please continue.
If we were to live, we had to be free of anger. The grouch and the brainstorm were not for us. They may be the dubious luxury of normal men, but for alcoholics, these things are painful.
Whoa. Did you guys see that? Like repetitively, these businesses, grave, fatal, die. There it is, poison. Over and over again. And then notice this little line here. The insanity of alcohol returns, and then we drink again. Then we drink again. Not like, oh, I got drunk and I was crazy and went on a bender. No, it happened before that. The resentment, the re-feeling of an old injury over. You ever had something happen to you and you're just pissed off? And you leave the building and you're playing the thing over and over, what they just did. Over and over. And you get on the freeway in your car and start driving and you miss your exit. Not that I've done that. Because it's a bad deal because I replay it over and over like an instant replay machine when you watch sports when somebody gets hit. And every time they slow the tape down and turn the camera, it hurts more. every time whatever you did is worse, and every time what I did or whatever involvement I had lessens. And I just keep doing it over and over. And I find myself in this spot where I'm just on edge. And it's a dangerous deal here. I squander the hours that might have been worthwhile. Anybody relate? And I'm stuck there. I can't stop it from happening. You know what they just did to me? You know what just happened to me? I just go on and on and on and on with this stuff. Yeah, and the outcome's never good. Because, when I'm not feeling good or I'm scared, which looks like anger, I don't act right. I don't behave right. My responses aren't normal. They're not rational. And I pay for it. I pay for it just by the way I'm living, but I have to remember what's at the end of that if I run that out long enough. That I get to this point where I've shut myself off from the line of the Spirit. If I harbor this, I don't know about you, but when I start hating on somebody, I take real good care of that hatred. I water it. I nurture it. I feed it. I tell other people about it to get them on board. I like to have them go, "Are you kidding me? They did that to you?" And I just, puff up more and more and more, like, yeah. But this is dangerous business, very dangerous business for the alcoholic. And it doesn't mean I'm not going to have this occur, but they're going to give us some things to do when it does occur here in the fourth and again in 10. Active 10 steps are so important, so, so important. Anybody questions or comments on this before we move on? Anything? Bridget, anything? Yeah, this is not good. So what are we going to do with this? We turn back to the list. Who wants to read that? Thank you. Wow. 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 I'm done. That's it. I can't wish it away. I can't wish it away. Whatever I do, it's there in front of me. If someone says to you, "Well, just don't think about it." Yeah, right. Just don't think about it. It just plays. You ever lay in bed and just have stuff play over and over and over? I had this happen recently where I woke up. I go to bed fine. I wake up at 2:00 in the morning and I can't sleep. Because the fear, I'm counting stuff. I'm counting inventory. I'm counting money. I'm thinking about, and then it starts to just run. The fear starts to run, and it just goes everywhere. And I'm laying there at 4:30 going, "I got to work tomorrow. Can't you let up a little bit?" So here we are. What am I going to do about this? I can't wish it away any more than alcohol. I'm back. I'm trapped. I'm in a trap I can't spring. I painted myself into the corner one more time. So what's going to happen here? And here's the answer. This was our course. Who wants to read that?
This was our course. We realized that people would come to rob us. Who would rob us was for that? Verse 6. Though we did not like their assistance in the way we distribute us, disturb us, they like all the sounds were victims. We ask God to help us show them the same tolerance, pity, and patience that we could cheerfully grant this spring. When a person offended, we said to ourselves, "This is a sick man. How can I be helpful to him? God save me from being angry. They will be done."
One more, please.
We avoid retaliation or argument. We wouldn't treat people that way. If we do, we destroy our chance of being helpful. We cannot be helpful to all people, but at least God will show us how to take a kindly and tolerant view of each and every one.
Thank you. Thank you. Questions or comments? Anybody have a comment on that at all? It's a forgotten paragraph, the two of them. I mean, we kind of breeze through them and move on. And And then there's a piece in the book later on where somebody in their story talks about praying for somebody for 2 weeks and it going away. Very useful tool. I've used it many, many times. It helps. But when that's not happening, what do I do here? What do I do with this? Because this is, I've been to some workshops where the focus has been the fourth step, and this has completely been overlooked. They just go right into this other portion, and they'll say stuff like, what was my part? Which is not even mentioned in here. It does not say, what was my part? They're going to talk about where am I to blame. But in this portion, it's skipped a lot, and he just gave me an antidote for the poison. He just gave me the antidote. He said here that we realize the people who hurt us were perhaps not perfect either. Maybe they weren't perfect. Maybe they were having a bad spiritual hair day. You know, maybe they didn't have the tools. Maybe they didn't know any better. Maybe I just happened to be the guy in the room. Maybe it wasn't personal. Because with me, everything's personal. Don't you know? And I have to look at this. Though I don't like their symptoms and what they're doing to me. Though I don't like the way it feels and the way it hurts. They, like me, are sick. And the big word, too. Too. Mean they're like me? You mean I'm like them? If I can't see that, I'm going to have a hard time forgiving. Because what I thought when I did my first inventory with that guidebook is what I did was I was politely pissed off at you now. I didn't forgive. I just thought, hey, how you doing, scumbag? You know, I hated on you. I just acted nice, you know, that's all. And here it's asking me to do something entirely different. It's asking me to put myself in your shoes, to look for where I'm like you. To look for that I'm not perfect either, that I've got flaws. And to ask, here's a prayer. I ask God to show them the same tolerance, pity, and patience that I would cheerfully grant a sick friend. When the person offended, I have a prayer. This is a sick man, Pop. How can I be helpful to him? Please save me from being angry. Your will be done. It's a prayer. I don't fight with them. I don't retaliate. I try not to. I wouldn't treat somebody sick that way. I can't be helpful to everybody, but at least God will show me how to be kindly and tolerant. This is so important because I don't know about you, but I belong to an active home group that's pretty large. And I got to tell you, people I love a lot end up on lists. They do stuff in the meeting and I'm like that. And I just go off, you know, and I'm on the phone with my sponsor writing it out, you know, and I got to look at where it is. I'll tell you that one of the big ones for me, when I did my fourth step with my sponsor, there were a lot. My ex-wife was one of them. My dad was a big one. My dad was a big one because the cause was that I put the notes here. He abused me. He put me down. He embarrassed me in front of my friends. He didn't teach me to play sports or to defend myself. Always told me I was good for nothing. It affects my self-esteem. I don't think much about myself. It affects my pocketbook. I don't have confidence in my abilities at all. Not at all. He's always mentioned my inabilities, and I grab that. It affects my ambitions, what I think my relationship should be when I see my other friends' dads and what they do. It's affecting that. My personal relations. I'm inadequate as a friend and as a person. If anybody looks at me the way he looks at me, I'm not worth the time. My sex relations. I question my ability to really be a man. My security. I don't feel I have or have what I had or have what I need as a young boy, and I'm unsafe. I have no one to turn to. It affects my pride. People see me as good for nothing, too. And the fear that he's right, that I'm nothing but a loser. That's some pretty heavy stuff to carry around for a lifetime. That will not make your day bright. And I had to, Bob sat down with me and Bob said, hey, tell me about your dad, Chuck. And I go, what do you want to know, Bob? He said, well, how did he grow up? I said, well, he was like one of eight kids. He was very poor. They worked in the fields when they were kids. He had to work to support his brothers and sisters. And he said, is there any alcoholism in the family? I said, well, I got these uncles. Yeah, when I was a kid, we used to have to go up to these camps. They were always locked up and they'd always come over drunk and he'd have to throw them out. And it was always a scene. And you know, he said, really? Yeah. He said, do you think maybe, perhaps, that, you know, your dad wanting the most for you, do you think that maybe when he saw the behavior that you displayed, do you think he might have saw that in his brothers who were drunks and out of the joint? Do you think some of the ways you thought and acted might have reminded you? And I went, he said, you think maybe sometimes he was a little rough with you because he didn't want his baby to have to suffer like that, be locked up and live like a pig his whole... You think maybe in trying to make things better for you, he went overboard a little bit? You think maybe he cared? And I was like, well, he put it that way. And then he said, I said, well, Bobby never told me he loved me. And he said, did you wear clean clothes to school? Was there food in the refrigerator? Did you move around a lot? Were you in the same house? He said, do you think maybe he told you he loved you because he went to work every day? Did a job he didn't really like? Maybe he didn't have time. Maybe he came from a life where, you know, you had to hustle to make it. You know, he just didn't have time to do all the things that your friends' dads were doing. And I was like, oh, my God. And he said, now let's talk about the kind of father you are. And I said, no, let's not do that. Let's not do that. You know, and then when that happened, the switch occurred. And I tell you something, I can't explain to you how or why. But when that I sat in that chair with my eyes welled up in embarrassment and frustrated on how I could be so wrong. Because it started to look clear. I was like, oh my God, he never abused me. Where'd I come up with this crap? You know, I mean, I would look at stuff like when I was a kid, my buddies would all go riding motorcycles or something, and he'd make me mow the yard, and I'd be in a hurry, and then he'd come back and he'd see a spot not done right, and he would lower the wheels and say, mow it again. And I thought he was being mean, and what he was teaching me was the value of doing a job right. I never saw it. I see it from a fear-based, me-first attitude, and I miss the whole picture. And I tell you something, I had to do this with my ex-wife. I mean, my mother died hating her. You know, my mother said she rode a broom, you know. I mean, she just hated the woman. And I had to look at that relationship and see what I did there. You know, when we did that, Bob said to me, you know, Chuck, I don't think if anybody was trying to run their wife off, could have did a better job than you. I left that inventory feeling sorry for her that she'd hung in as long as she did, which was a change. When they talk about the 180 turn, this is what they're talking about. The view starting to change. It must change. I cannot change the past. My view of it must change. I must start to look for. And maybe I'm giving them more credit than they deserve. But what do I want to do? Do I want to be right, or do I want to lay on the pillow at night and let my head hit it and be okay with the world and be at peace? What do I really want? Do I want to be right, or do I want to be happy? Well, I'm happy when I'm right, but what do I really want? Do I want to look at how people, what they're doing and what's going on with them? What's their backgrounds, their insecurities, their fears? Could I do what they did? Could I? Not would I. Could I do what they did? And it doesn't matter unequivocally across the board what it is. I don't care how heinous. If I'm honest with myself and I ask myself that question, when have I done things I said I would never do? And how many times did I repeat that? How many lines in the sand have I drawn and crossed over? And who am I to blame them? And I must find the forgiveness. They're telling me I have to forgive. We say a prayer. We've been saying it at the end of every one of these little sessions. Forgive us our trespass as they, in direct proportion, as I forgive them. Because I'm on the hook. I'm on the hook. Emmett Fox talks about, he talks about taking poison. Resentment is taking poison and expecting that dude to die. We know who's going to get the benefit of the poison. And to put somebody in jail, you have to have two people, the jailee and the jailer. But you're both stuck and you're both tied to each other. And if I get free of it, I start to get the peace. When I can get off my high horse and realize, who am I? Who am I? It's the beginning of a process here. And it's something that's missed a lot. Let's go to the next piece on this in the referring to our list. Who wants to read that? Everybody jump at once. Thank you. Thank you very much. Questions or comments? Anybody? Anybody at all? So let's forget about what they did for a moment. Let's just put that on hold. We look for my own mistakes. Where have I been selfish, dishonest, self-seeking, and frightened in this resentment? I'm looking at the resentment. You know, one of the things I was lucky, because there are some things that can happen. I have nothing to do with what happened. How could I have defended myself against whatever that could have been? We're not looking at that. We're looking at the resentment. I don't care what's going on. If I'm resenting somebody from when I was 7 years old, I'm a little older than that now. I'm having conversations with dead people. This isn't good. This isn't good. So I'm looking at where I've been selfish, dishonest, self-seeking, and frightened. Where am I to blame? Selfish. This is back to this one I was on a minute ago. Inconsiderate of his view or feelings. Dishonest. I lied a lot, especially my regard to the attitude of his love that he showed me by his actions. Self-seeking. I'm only concerned with me and what I want. Frightened that I'm alone in the world. These are the things driving me. These things are driving me, and I don't see it. I got to look for where I'm to blame. It doesn't say what's my part. That's commonly used in AA. What my part was, and I get what they're saying, and I don't have a beef with it. The difficulty is that it implies that they have a part. And let me give you some news. They don't have a part in my resentment. That's mine. It's mine. I'm the one who's replaying this over. Oftentimes they forgot it even happened. What happened, the event, I have to forgive. It may not be excusable, but it's forgivable. Difference. But I have to get right with it and look for where I'm to blame. Why is it 35 years later I'm still acting like it happened yesterday? Why is it when a male authority says something to me, I get on the muscle? Why is it I behave this way? Why is it I mistreat people? Why is it I'm... It's going back to all this stuff. Why is it after the divorce? Why is it that I treat women the way I do? Why is it? I go back and see this stuff. It's there. It's where I'm to blame that keeps resurfacing over and over and over in different places. And I don't see what's going on. And the world becomes very, very ugly and very, very dark. And I'm very, very scared. And I have to protect myself and rely on me again. And that ain't good. We already saw what happens when I do that in step three. So they tell me here, we listed our faults, you placed them in black and white. So I list the defects of character. What are the defects of character in me that if God would remove, the resentment would be gone? I'm angry, argumentative, critical, defiant, dependent, disloyal, disobedient, disrespectful, hypersensitive, impatient, not trusting God, retaliator, self-centered, ungrateful. And the list goes on. And I'll see them over and over and over and over again. The patterns that I could see in an inventory are just overwhelming, and they keep reappearing. I think Sharon says it. She says, I can pray for my character defects to be removed, and they never get removed. They just go off stage and change costumes. But I got to know what it is I'm praying for. I got to list this stuff down and look at what is it in me that's making me do this over and over and feel the way that I'm feel. Because I really don't want to do this anymore. I would like to walk out in the world and feel like people are nice and kind. And I love people. They love me. I'd like to be there. I'd like to be where I don't have that thing in my gut twisting and turning all the time. And I'm feeling so out of place, out of sorts, so disconnected, such anxious apartness from everything. That my whole life I'm going to have come and go. I wish we could say, we're this one time we're all going to be fine, and that's just not the deal. Like, I don't know what Bridget says, I'm a resentment lint trap. which really makes sense. You know, we got to reach in that dryer and pull out that thing and scrape it out. You know, it's got to be done regularly. And keep this in mind. I get a cold more than once in my life. I get a cold, you know, a couple times a year sometimes. Every other year, I got to take out the trash. And this is part of the process. I do 10 steps, but oftentimes I long for them this way when they're really bothering me. And I've had a lot of them. I've had a lot of them recently. But this is the start. This is what we do in the resentment portion. Anybody want to share a resentment or ask or talk about a resentment or anything, guys? Anybody? Sure. Yeah. That sounds, the word justified resentment comes into play, but I have to realize there's no such thing. There's no, what happened was wrong, awful, should have never happened. People should probably be held accountable for what they did. No question about that. No question about that. That is wrong. The problem is what it's doing, the pain it's causing. I've had guys who were molested by people when they were little and abused very, very badly. And I've never said, you know, you had a part in that. No, I've said, you're 35 years old now, and that person's not in your life, and you don't go anywhere near them, but we must forgive. I must get to a place where I at least let go of this and move on. Now, I'm not going to go have lunch with the guy or hang out with him. I'm going to cut a clear path around that stuff. But I've got to get to a place where I find some peace in this and look at what's really going on in terms of where I'm at today and what's going on in life. It's not okay. My friend Scott was a Jewish guy who was like hated Nazis. And he said, I never did anything to Nazis. I mean, this is what, but he went through this. He had to go through this and realize, you know, I've got to forgive. I've got to forgive because it just poisons me. You know, if I walk around with that, and the problem with me being able to be the victim in something, not that it's not a, God's a victim, no question. But if I hold on to the victim mentality, the self-pitying kicks in. And as long as I can blame these guys for how I am, I never have to accept responsibility for my own actions. And I stay sick. And I get sicker and sicker and sicker. And it's a horrible thing. I've talked to a lot of people who went through things I don't even, they're horrendous. I can just go, my God. But at some point in the game, I have to, forgiveness is what it's calling for here. And I got to look for where I'm to blame. Where am I to blame in that resentment? I keep replaying it. Where am I to blame my resentment? I use it as currency. I tell people about it so you feel sorry for me. I used to go to the Connections house and like talk about my wife, and he would, you know, give me free stuff. You know what I mean? I'll use that stuff for current. It means something to me. My buddy Scott used to say, self-pity is a wonderful drug. If we could bottle it, it would not crack off the market. It's a warm, fuzzy feeling when I'm in self-pity. I don't have an answer for that. I can just say that my experience is there's no such thing as a justifiable resentment, regardless. There was a guy years ago who used to speak in AA. He died a few years ago. His name was Father Ed Mutum. And Ed was a young kid. He was in the gang when he was a kid, Irish guy. And he was a tough guy, real dangerous. And his dad was at a bar drinking, and some thugs went in there and robbed the place, and they shot his father and killed him. And the police went and arrested Ed because they knew Ed would be chasing people around the streets trying to kill them, trying to find the guys. So they locked him up, let him out, and Ed burned his life to the ground, and he became AA and got sober. He got sober, became a minister, and later on he started corresponding with the guy that killed his dad in prison. And he forgave the guy. It goes beyond that. When it came up time to parole, Ed offered to let the guy parole to his home and took the guy in. Like, I'm not saying that's what you got to do. I'm just saying he took it that far that he came to this place where he found that kind of forgiveness. I don't know that I could do that. I don't know that I would do that. but I've got to get to a place where, at least in my head, it doesn't mean I go around the perpetrator and all that, but I've got to get to a point where I can see what drives people like that. What my fear and my insecurities and the way I act out is bad. His is different. His is different, and it's another way. And I have to look at that. None of us are perfect. And for me to judge people, which we all do a little, but for me to judge people, who am I? I'm the guy that puts T-shirts on his kid because he can't buy diapers. I'm the guy that stands in front of the grocery store with my kid in the cart telling you, could you help us out? We need Isomil or Similac. You know, my son's hungry. And then when you pay, give me the money, sometimes I buy the milk and sometimes I buy a bottle. I'm the guy that sits in front of Toys R Us during Christmas because you people really, really put out during the holidays when you have a kid in the basket. I'm that guy. I'm the guy that puts his hands on the girl he loves. I'm that guy. Who am I? Who am I? When I look at that stuff, I go, oh my, you know. So, and it's a healing process when I start to see that. I don't know in that situation what works best or not, but we've dealt with it a few times with different sponsees. So, anybody else on this at all? Yes.
You know, it kind of ties in with what you were touching on later or earlier when we talked about when we're disturbed and looking at the other person and how the actions we can take on that. When I was new, and still comes up for me, I go into martyr mode. I got sober. It's all my fault. All my part. I did everything wrong. I'm broken. God help me. But there was this disconnect with the reality that, like, bad things happen.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes people do things that are hurtful and harmful. Because of my family of origin and other stuff, I was very comfortable in saying, we didn't go to this place of, it's all me. And not even acknowledging kind of the reality of that, and kind of just like shoving that stuff down. So, I really like to brought that up and talked about this, that sometimes people do things that are hurtful. Let's acknowledge that. Because that was something in my brain actually blocked out. It was easier for me to just go, me, and I got to work it out. Which then, later, put me in another position to be hurt again.
Yep.
Because I would not build that fence. Like you said, sometimes you need to stay away from hurtful or dangerous situations and set myself up again. And I noticed it with some stuff in my own inventory with some of the stuff that happened when I was a kid, not really acknowledging the fact that I was put in bad situations, and unsafe, unhealthy, hurtful, that, okay, I have resentment, okay, now I don't have resentment anymore, because I've let go of that, but yet not acknowledging the reality that was not safe or good, and then I end up with children of my own. And then now I'm in a position where I may not be keeping them safe. Because I never acknowledged the whole thing.
Yeah.
And, you know, and I find that in the program, I have this filter where I just filter through my spirit.
Uh-huh.
And I got to be really careful of this filter that I just get rid of it. And listen to all the parts and get all the moving pieces. Because then here I am back where, okay, I'm not walking around pissed off, but I've set myself or people or my loved ones up to be in a position to be hurt because I didn't acknowledge that I was hurt and that it was painful. And I didn't get that for a long, long time. All I heard was, you're a POS and you need to do this to clean up your side of the street and then you'll be okay. And that was true, but it was like, it wasn't all that I'm not in trouble later.
Thank you. There's a page in the 12 and 12 in step 10 where he says this really pertains to this. Finally, we begin to see that all people, including ourselves, are to some extent emotionally ill as well as frequently wrong. And then we approach true tolerance and see what real love for our fellows actually means. It will become more and more evident as we go forward that it is pointless to become angry or to get hurt by people who, like us, are suffering the pains of growing up. So there it is. That's the resentment portion. And then we go right into the fear portion. So I have that one inventory. Here comes the next inventory because I got some fears. I got to write out the fears. But on page 67, notice the word fear. Who wants to read that?
Notice the word fear is bracketed alongside difficulties with Mr. Brown, Ms. Jones, the employer, and the wife. This short word somehow touches about every aspect of our lives. It was an evil and corroding thread. The fabric of our existence was shot through with it. It set in motion strange circumstances which brought us misfortune we thought we didn't deserve. But did not we ourselves set the ball rolling? Sometimes we think fear ought to be classed with stealing. It seems to cause more trouble. We reviewed our fears thoroughly. We put them on paper, even though we had no resentment in connection with them. We asked ourselves why we had them. Wasn't it because self-reliance failed us? Self-reliance was good as far as it went, but it didn't go far enough. Some of us once had great self-confidence that it didn't fully solve the fear problem or any other. When it made us cocky, it was worse. Perhaps there is a better way. We think so, for we are now on a different basis. Basis of trusting and relying upon God. We trust infinite God rather than our finite selves. We are in the world to play the role He assigns, just to the extent that we do as we think He would have us, and humbly rely on Him. Does He enable us to match calamity with serenity? We never apologize to anyone for depending upon our Creator. We can laugh at those who think spirituality is the way of weakness. Paradoxically, it is the way of strength. The verdict of the ages is faith means courage. All men of faith have courage. They trust their God. We never apologize for God. Instead, we let Him demonstrate to us what He is. We ask Him to remove our fear and direct our attention to what He would have us be.
That's a lot of stuff there. Yeah. Evil and corroding thread, a thief. That ought to be classed with stealing. What's it steal? Opportunities? Yeah. Totally. Here it is. If I can't be the best at something, I ain't doing it. Or I think, I wouldn't be good at that. I wouldn't like that. That sucks. I wouldn't like that until I try it. I don't know how many times I've pulled that one. I'm terrible like that. It's fear. It's all fear. How am I going to look? How it's going to go down? I'm not going to get what I want. Over and over and over and over. Evil and controlling threat. Evil and controlling threat. Always in the future. Fear is always in the future. It's always what's going to happen. It looks like it's now. I'm bringing it. My friend used to say, you're borrowing agony and pain from the future. You know, you're not even there. He told a story about a woman in his home group. She was at a bank cashing her check, and out of nowhere, this guy walks up and shoves a gun into her side, holds her hostage, robs the bank, comes out with a gun at her head, and gets in a car. And the police were everywhere. Got the SWAT team and all that. She's got the gun to her head. They put her in the key. Gets in the car. She's driving with the bank robber. They drive a few blocks. The cops give him some distance. He opens the car door, switches with her, kicks her out, and drives away. And she's at the meeting talking about this. And they're going, weren't you terrified? She said, you know, when I thought about it, I wasn't afraid of what was going on. I was afraid he was going to pull the trigger. I'm afraid of what's going to happen. And the problem is I fiend on it like I do everything else, and I make it happen. Self-fulfilling prophecy. Self-fulfilling prophecy. The Buddhists say you go where you look. You go where you look. And if I'm going to look at that and stare at it and focus on it, as a man thinketh, so he shall be. You get to be right. The universe is really accommodating. You get to be right. You get to be right. I'm just ordering it. I'll have some of that. The problem is, how do I not do that? It's rolling in my head. And how do I not do that? Well, it says here, am I on the basis of trusting, relying upon God? Am I? We think there's a better way. We sure as hell hope so. Am I on a different basis? Am I going to trust God? Am I in the world to play the role He assigns, or am I doing my own dance? Am I ready to humbly rely on Him, even when I'm scared? And one of the things I hear from people is like, wherever there's God, you can't be fear. Wherever there's love, well, it says right here that He enables me to match calamity with serenity. And nowhere more evident do I see that in the amends. When I don't want to do something and I'm terrified, but I walk in there and do it. Calamity with serenity. And then it goes on to say, we never apologize and all that. Then it gives me my answer to the problem. What am I afraid of? Why am I afraid? I'm afraid because self-reliance failed me. I'm afraid because on my own steam, I cannot make it go away. It keeps coming back up and back up and back up. Over and over and over. I have to watch this because this will, if I'm not careful, I will act in a way that will produce the fear. If I'm worried about losing my relationship, I will start asking questions that I shouldn't ask. Then I get more paranoid. Then I start checking the phone to see who's been calling, which isn't good. Then I start going to the purse to see if there's business cards that don't belong in there. And then eventually they go, I'm done with you. I can't take this. You're all over me. And the thing I feared, which was really being alone, is now happening. And then I have a smug little, I was right. I knew it. I've got to be careful with that. So what I'll have to do is look at how I can't make it go away. And I get to this point, self-reliance, I'm on a different basis. And then I have to, here's the prayer. I ask God to remove our fear and direct our attention to what it would have me be. This has become a chant at times. Like when something's really scary, I've gotten to a point where I'll just chant this over. To give you an example, I was at my Saturday morning meeting a few years back, and I have these. I love cats, and one of my cats got sick, and we took her in, and she had kidney failure, and that's, we know she's not going to live. And my wife's baby, we thought we'll get him checked out. So we take him down. They do a bunch of blood work, and they're going to give us the results. And I get a call from the vet as I'm walking into my Saturday morning meeting, and it's saying, well, we need you to come down here and we'll talk to you. So I'm sitting through the whole meeting and I'm not hearing anything at all. Because, when I'm in a relationship problem or I'm afraid about something, I don't pay attention. My old sponsor said, he could walk up to me and say, I'm dying of cancer, and I'll look at you and say, you know what else I'm afraid of? I hear nothing. And so, and I'm sitting there, and now I'm fainting out. The meeting's going to end, and my gut's hurting, and I feel sick. And I'm scared about what's going to happen. It's really bothering me. I love this cat. My wife loves this. I know this is crazy, but I love this cat. And I'm going crazy here. And I get in the car to drive to the vet. And I'm not okay to drive like this, because I'm insane. And I start saying this prayer over and over and over. God, please remove the fear and direct my attention to what you would have me be. God, please remove the fear and direct my attention to what you would have me be. Please remove the fear and direct my attention, Pop, to what you would have me be. And if we read later in the book, I think it's 132, he says, we are sure God wants us to be happy, joyous, and free. And so I have to rely on the power. I have to realize I don't have any power here, any control. And I hope what happens, I hope if you're new here, I hope what's happened to me over and over in Alcoholics Anonymous happens to you. And this is what has happened to me over and over in AA. In Alcoholics Anonymous, sometimes right from in here, not up in here, sometimes from right in here, I get this feeling that no matter what goes on, I'll be okay. Sometimes I get that feeling. And that comes from that. It comes from that, from really trying to mean what I'm saying here. So I write out the fear and I look at it. Because I'm never going to be rid of it, but I must find a way to derail the train. Because the train is going down a bad path and there ain't no stopping it once it gets rolling. So I got to start derailing the train to something else. And I go to the power one more time. Very important stuff. Anybody want to talk on fear? Anybody have a... Yeah?
But why we had these fear portion of the inventory became really open my eyes up. If I get a fear, like in the third column where I bracket fears next to the item that I was listing, the third column, say, I'm not the type of person that would get resentful because I suffer from my low self-esteem. what I found on inventory that I suffered from overly high self. Think about it. If I really thought I was a piece of crap, and you crossed my path and validated that, why would I get this off of you? You could just be validating what I already believe about myself. I get this off because you don't see me the way that I see you. The way that I see you. But I would have a fear of like not being good enough, right? Well, when I took that fear and I broke it down into the why did I have this fear, it'd be like, well, why did I have the fear of not being good enough? Because if I'm not good enough, then nobody's going to want me. And why do I have a fear of being unwanted? Because if I'm not wanted, then what? Then I end up all alone. And if I end up all alone, then what? Well, that's an emotionally painful place for me to be at. Well, why do I have that fear? Because if I sit in emotional pain long enough, I'm going to drink again.
Mm-hmm.
And why do I fear drinking again? Because for me to drink is for me to die. Why do I fear dying? Because I've never died. I don't know what that's like. I got a fear of the unknown.
Yeah.
Why do I fear the unknown? It goes deeper than that.
Yeah.
I don't know if that's going to be good. I don't know if that's going to be bad. I don't know if it's going to be nothing at all. Maybe that I fear the unknown because maybe I really don't believe that there's going to be a God there to catch me on the other side of death. I'm not even willing to rely on the God on this side of the dirt.
Good point.
So, this is where all this fear is stemming from, and it's like, if there is no God, then who the hell am I left with? And it goes right to what that next sentence says. Wasn't it because self-reliance failed? Because that's who I'm going to be left with, is me. And hasn't self-reliance always failed me? Mm-hmm. And if the inventory doesn't expose me to that, then chances are, you know, I'm going to continue to think that I can do the trick. You know, but deep down underneath, I can see at the root fear that the inventory takes me down that self-reliance dip.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and when it says driven by 100 forms of fear,
mm-hmm.
that's really where the fear inventory, that becomes true for me. So it's really important that I got to see that.
Absolutely. Yeah. Yeah, it's like, what are you afraid of? What am I not afraid of? I'm like a fish in a fish looking for the water. I think we're at a break time again. Yeah, and we have one more session. We're not going to get very